The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Welcome to the podcast. I want to tell you we are coming on tour, Glenn and I, to Orlando and Tampa. Get your tickets at glennbeck.com/tour. We would love to see you. It's in a couple of weeks. If you happen to be in Florida, we would love for you to hang out and come see the show. It's a lot of fun and a lot of election stuff, and it's a good time. Check it out at glennbeck.com/tour. We are joined by the host of Pat Gray Unleashed today to talk about all the news going on. You can get that podcast, by the way, when you're done listening to this one. Mm-hmm. At Pat Gray Unleashed is the name of that one. And it was an interesting show. We kind of started talking about what's the state of the affairs. Is it okay to now watch the NFL, or are we supposed to still be boycotting it? I can't keep track of these things.
And if you're not watching the NFL, what a game you missed on Monday Night Football. That's unbelievable. Highest scoring game ever on Monday night.
It was incredible.
Out of like 700-something games on Monday night.
Amazing.
It's amazing.
It was really fun to watch. We have a new presidential candidate on the Democratic side that has not really been talked about, is now jumping into the ring. He's got billions and billions of dollars to spend, and he's going to try to convince you to elect him president of the United States.
And there's an older candidate who's coming back into the picture and has just received a new nickname from the president.
It's true.
Which we talked about.
Also, we have a pretty amazing... There's some stuff from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which is interesting, but also an amazing statement from the founder of the Women's March, who's now distancing themselves from all the anti-Semitism that has kind of crept into that movement. We'll get into that. Some climate stuff as well, and really that's about it of value. I don't know if there's anything else.
No, I think you're right, Stu. That's about it. Of value. Yeah, anything of value.
There were a couple segments we didn't mention, but those didn't have value. That's what I was trying to say. Right. But I guess if you want to listen to Jeffy more often, you can sign up and subscribe to his podcast. Chewing the Fat is the name of it. Chewing the Fat with Jeff Fisher. All right, here's the podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Tuesday, November 20th.
Brickhouse Nutrition. You don't have to eat your peas, you know. To get the goodness of vegetables, you don't have to eat your peas. You don't have to eat your greens. You don't have to eat kale. What you need to do is get Brickhouse Nutrition's Field of Greens, because, you know, everyone likes to call themselves a superfood, which is just like, to me, it's just basically a scam term. I don't know. It doesn't seem to mean anything to anyone. But how about just food? A lot of these things are just extracts and weird supplements and things that, you know, there's some odd collection of ingredients. Not Field of Greens. Field of Greens is just food. It's just real food. You get to eat your vegetables without having to eat your vegetables. For a limited time offer, visit BrickHouseGlen.com. Use the promo code Glenn. Get 15% off your first order. It's BrickHouseGlen.com. 15% off if you use the promo code Glenn. Do that now. It's BrickHouseGlen.com.
Pretty good Monday Night Football game last night.
Yes. In fact, it's all I want to talk about today. I know that might not be the most popular choice, but that's exactly what I want to talk about today, is the National Football League. That game last night was honestly one of the best sporting events I've ever watched in my entire life. Now, of course, it comes into a distant second, at least, to last year's Super Bowl, which was the greatest sporting event of all time. But that game last night, Pat, and I don't think you stayed up for it, right? You have to get up so early for Pat Gray Unleashed.
I recorded it.
You did. It's worth watching. Mm-hmm. It's actually that fun. And it was an incredible game last night. And I'm watching it, I mean, because, you know, it was 54-51 as a final. I was listening to a little of Pat Gray Unleashed earlier, and you made the point, which is a sensible one, of where was there any defense on the field at all? And that's what I think was incredible about that game, is that there was a lot of defense. I mean, there were three defensive touchdowns, in the game. You know, two of them by one guy, Samson Ebukam. He was incredible. Mm-hmm. Aaron Donald played one of the best games, most dominant games by an interior defensive lineman I've ever seen.
That's hard to believe.
Ever watched. I mean, he was dominating the entire game. And again, it was 54-51. Now, again, 21 of the points were on defense. So, I mean, you could see there was a decent amount of turnovers. I mean, it was just back and forth and crazy. And as I'm watching this game, it is just one of those things fully, if you like sports, right, there's a certain line of people, like, and Glenn always falls on the other side of this line. He's transitioning when it comes to sports, and he is on the other side of that line, and he doesn't care about it. So if you don't care about sports, you don't care about sports. But as this game is ending, I'm thinking to myself, there are some people who don't care about sports. There are some people like a Mr. Pat Gray who's responsible and decided not to go, to go to bed, but mm-hmm. still recorded it, right?
Yes.
And all that, there's some people who watch the game. All those people I fully understand. But allow me to make a pitch here. Allow me to revisit with new information the group of people who love the NFL, who love watching football, but who didn't watch because they were boycotting the league. Polls show this is not a huge number, but in this audience, it's probably a significant representation in this audience. And you're not doing it because, as we know, Colin Kaepernick was kneeling and all the controversy that's gone over that over the last couple of years. And I understand why you would do that. I understand why you would think the national anthem and our country is more important than sports. It's a sensible decision, and I understand it. However, Colin Kaepernick isn't in the league. The man is not employed by the National Football League. He is not in the league and has not been in the league for multiple years. He took a knee. And yes, he has no idea what he's talking about when it comes to the statistics of policing. Does he understand what any of the words that come out of his mouth? The answer to that is no. He doesn't. He does not understand it at all. But you can't let Colin Kaepernick's sock choices determine what you do with your life. I thought to myself, like, this is one of the most enjoyable sporting events I've ever watched in my life. And people are avoiding it because of what Colin Kaepernick put on his feet. Who cares what Colin Kaepernick does? He deserves no power over anyone in this audience. He should not be making one decision for any individual person in this audience. We're conservatives. We're individualists. We're people who think for ourselves. And to let Colin Kaepernick make a choice for you makes no sense to me at all. Remember, this is a league that not only does not employ Colin Kaepernick, but employs what? Two players who are kneeling? And I think one cheerleader who's kneeling? Two players and one. There's 1,000 players in this league. There's two players who are kneeling. Why would you boycott something over that?
And we don't even hear about them.
And we don't even hear about them anymore. I understand that these culture sort of wars go on and you feel like, with social, Glenn's book really keeps popping into my head as I watch this stuff go on. Addicted to Outrage, available now. But, you're going to see this at Thanksgiving. There's Thanksgiving table, too. And people are going to be so angry about all these, little issues related to politics, and people take their sides. And I understand all that. And sometimes it's important to make your stand. And, these issues, these cultural issues can be important. We talk about them every day. But the idea that 2 out of 1,000 players are kneeling, that would keep you away of such an enjoyable 3-plus hours last night. It's criminal. Colin Kaepernick should not be controlling our lives and our decisions. And I there's something about this where, I don't know, we just get on these lines and it's partially because of politics and partially because, Colin Kaepernick's points are really terrible. Like, he's vilifying American heroes. He is doing things that push back against the cultural fabric of this country. I'm a patriotic guy. I know most of the audience is as well. Pat's got a flag on his shirt right now. I'm not kneeling. I'm not kneeling in front of it. I've got no interest in kneeling in front of the flag. And I got when we've gone over the stats a million times, Colin Kaepernick and the people who agree with Colin Kaepernick that are in the NFL are wrong on most of these issues. That's not to say there's never an incident of unwarranted violence towards African Americans by police officers. But we know, we've looked at these stats a million times. There is almost nothing to support the opinion of Colin Kaepernick. But that's even more of a reason to not let it determine your choices. It's even more of a reason to not let Colin Kaepernick make these choices for you. He makes bad choices. He's made choices that have cost him millions of dollars, arguably. Most of those choices were throwing it to defensive players instead of offensive players. But that's a whole other situation. And I just can't... I just was watching this last night, and I'm like, our audience, most of them will do what they want to do. Most of them will say, hey... You know, look, I'm not going to let this guy, you know, decide my life for it. I think football sucks. I'm not going to watch it. If football's great, I'm going to watch it. But I don't understand this. You know, every place you go into has people who feel like Colin Kaepernick. Every grocery store trip you go into, you're buying food that was stocked by people who agree with Colin Kaepernick. Every restaurant you go into has a server or a cook or someone else who works there who agrees with Colin Kaepernick, and they're probably posting publicly about it on their social media accounts. Every single time, I guarantee the radio station you're listening to with all the conservative hosts has an engineer or an IT guy or somebody else that agrees with Colin Kaepernick. This is our world. You deal with people who are wrong all the time. And yet the one thing that everybody seems to want to boycott is the National Football League. The one thing I know, at least in my life, is the highest level of entertainment. I know I love it so much, and I know that's not everybody. It's easy to avoid entertainment you don't like. But if you love it, there's just no reason to let Colin Kaepernick or any of the other morons making points associated with him control your decisions. It's just not sensible. And I think in the heat of the moment when there's, you know, Trump's tweeting about it and Pence is going to the games and leaving games and it's a big issue and MSNBC's talking about it all the time, I can understand getting in the middle of that and taking a side on it. Because of the two arguments, I completely side with Donald Trump on the idea that it's a terrible protest. I think they should have the right to protest, but I think it's a bad series of points. But that's past now. The fury is past. The intense back and forth has passed. Isn't it another moment to? Isn't it time in this really complicated world where everybody hates everybody for everything? To just step back and say, look, if a football game is something I want to watch, I'm going to freaking watch it. You know, it's the same thing with movies. You know, I'm very excited, as you know, Pat, to go see Creed 2 tonight. And Sylvester Stallone is Republican-ish, right? I don't know if he's officially out that way. I mean, he has a good relationship, seemingly, with Donald Trump. He worked with him on a pardon a few months ago for a former boxer. But... You know, Sylvester Stallone, obviously the Rocky guy, but guaranteed half or more of that cast probably, if they had a choice, would side with Colin Kaepernick, right? Mm-hmm. Like every Hollywood movie you go to, every television show you watch, I mean, every time you watch a Fox News program, you're watching a show that probably has camera guys and, people working behind the scenes in every capacity that agree with Colin Kaepernick. But we don't boycott Fox News, you know. Shepard Smith's on the air, and we don't boycott Fox News, right? Like we have to understand. I think that so often people in Washington and in the media find little issues like this, and that is what this is. By the way, Colin Kaepernick, a man who I wouldn't trust to order the catering at Thanksgiving dinner. I wouldn't trust him with any decision in my life. I don't trust him. I've seen the analysis he has made on two major situations. One, how bad cops are. I know he's wrong there. And two, who he's supposed to throw to. And it's constantly the other team. So I know he does not make good decisions. It's the reason he's not in the league. Much more the decision-making on the field than the other way around. But it's like, you know, to see that and to... I just feel like Washington and the media and all these sites and all the social media accounts are constantly trying to use us to get us to click on things, to push us into these passionate decisions that we're going to make and lock ourselves into choices that we ourselves don't even enjoy. We're taking things that we like out of our lives because of other people's choices. And I just, you know, it's Thanksgiving week. One of the most important parts of Thanksgiving, I think number one is obviously football. Number two, I think is family or something. Two's food and three's family. And four is like talking to people. And I think five is that great nap that you have after you have dinner and you fall asleep on the couch and your guts half hanging out over your belt. And you look like Jeffy, basically. At least you feel like Jeffy. Those are the important moments of Thanksgiving. And this week, I think it's time to reconsider that if you went that way. You made your point. I mean, if you wanted to make your point, you made your point. I mean, the National Football League seems to be thriving. I don't know that it had a huge impact on them. But, you know, like that doesn't matter. If you believe it, then do it. If you really believe that this is an important thing to do, you know, more power to you. I just feel like so many people get caught up in this without even thinking through the idea that what they're doing is giving power over their lives to some dope who's kneeling on a field. And it just doesn't make any sense to me.
And the protest is essentially, for all intents and purposes, over.
Over.
It's over. I mean, nobody talks about it. No, nobody even makes note of it. I don't even know who the two players are that you mentioned.
I'm making the number up. I mean,
I don't even know if there are two.
I mean, I know Eric Reed is still in the league, and he was one of the guys who was...
He said he was going to keep doing it.
He said, I don't know if he's still doing it.
Yeah, I don't even know.
I don't know. I mean, think about this, how ridiculous...
The only thing I've seen is the cheerleader.
The cheerleader was recent. She won, I think, a Buccaneers cheerleader.
And who cares? I don't care what the cheerleader does.
But, like, that's...
Whatever.
It's a great point, though. You know, I don't care what the cheerleader does either, right? But, like, shouldn't we think of the players the same way? Why do we favor what the players think about a political issue over the cheerleaders? The cheerleaders have more time to be thinking about it. They probably are more informed than most of the players. Like, there's no reason, you know, a guarantee, like, you go to that game, if every single player stops kneeling and every cheerleader stops kneeling, there's going to be thousands of concession workers and thousands of people working at the networks that carry the games and thousands of people who work for the websites that you visit that would go and talk about the games. Every franchise has got people in their offices who do this. This is an issue. We live in a society where people get to make their own minds up, and sometimes they make really terrible decisions and they're wrong. Mm-hmm. And Glenn's got into this world before, and we always talk about this. We used to have this argument with Glenn all the time whenever he would decide, I don't know, maybe I'm going to boycott X, Y, or Z. It was usually sports, and we always made fun of him because you don't like sports, Glenn. You can't. It doesn't count as a boycott. You can't boycott the NFL.
Right. Because you weren't watching it in the first place.
Exactly.
You know, I'm boycotting ballet.
Right. Then
yeah,
you do.
Yeah. Okay. That's powerful.
You're taking a tough one. That's like Lent when you give up. I'm giving up crack cocaine. Well, I don't do crack cocaine. I do regular cocaine. So I wouldn't need, that wouldn't even be a, anyway. But like with Glenn, we always come back to him and say, well, what about entertainment? You go to 16 movies a week. You giving those up? He usually get very mad at us when we made that point.
Yes.
But, you know, it's true. I mean, it, like, you can find this everywhere. There's no way to be consistent in your life on these stances because every single thing you do has people. There are conservatives. We know this in every aspect of society. Right. With the exception of maybe academics, you can basically find them everywhere, even in Hollywood. Right. And so many of them are in hiding, but still, they're out there. The same thing happens with people who are completely wrong about police officers. They're there. They're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just never going to be able to be consistent on this issue. So why pick one that's going to cost you enjoyment out of your life that you'll never get back? I just don't get it. And, I don't know. Maybe I'm alone on this one, but it doesn't. I like your point here, Pat, too. It's basically over.
It is.
It's over anyway.
Yeah, it is.
So even if you thought at the time, when Kaepernick was in the league, at least there was an argument. The guy's not even in the league. He hasn't been in the league for 2 or 3 years.
I don't think he's ever going to be again.
Nor should he be.
No, nobody cares anymore. And he had his chance. I mean, he had several teams offer him.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it was too big a point he wanted to make. And so he continued to make the point. All right, well, you made your point.
Yeah, good for
and
him.
You lost out on probably, who knows, over 3 or 4, 3 years now. It's probably... $30 million you lost out on? Well, good for you. That must be great.
That's a great... I mean,
it's a pretty powerful point.
There you go. He got his Nike commercial out of it.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he did.
He got that.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
You getting pumped up for the Tom Steyer presidential
bid? Oh, my gosh. I can't even.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm so pumped about Tom Steyer.
He wasn't even on any of the poll questions.
Democrat billionaire.
Yeah. He's basically, I think what he's trying to do is get out ahead of Bloomberg. Because this is a guy, you've seen his face before if you've watched cable news probably.
Because he's leading the way for impeachment.
Yeah. He's been the guy. He spent $20 or $100 million of his own
million
money
bucks.
To try to push people into getting familiar with the Donald Trump impeachment that he's trying to push for. And so this is going to be where he runs if he does. And he's taking steps. He's
there's not one chance, not a chance, that he wins the Democrat nomination.
I no longer say things like this.
And if he did, I'll eat my underwear if he wins the Democrat nomination. This is one where I can go out on a limb. Mm-hmm. I just swore this off and said I'd never do this again.
No, you got to do it again.
But Tom Steyer, I got to do this for Tom Steyer.
So let's go back to the underwear review for Pat. The first it was Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah,
Elizabeth Warren will
if
not.
If she wins the Democrat nomination, I'd eat my underwear. Didn't happen.
Didn't happen. She didn't run.
And then the next one, I believe, was
a little closer.
It was a little closer.
In fact,
that was a little nervous election day. Fact is, with Beto O'Rourke.
Right.
Because over a year ago, I said, yeah, come on. No. There's no way that Beto O'Rourke beats Ted Cruz. And he came dang close.
2.5 points, basically. So, yeah, that was a close one.
So I didn't have to eat my underwear, though.
I feel confident.
And now I feel confident if Tom Steyer wins the Democrat nomination, I will eat my underwear.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Let's tell you about Relief Factor. Relief Factor has been helping Glenn for quite a long time alleviate some pretty severe pain he's had and issues he's had with that. There's a thing he does, like there's a little video. Have you ever seen this, Pat? Where there's like Glenn standing on like a farm. And he's by a fence,
that.
And he's like, look, I just do a lot of hard work outdoors, and I get a lot of pain from it. And you're just like, wait, you do?
No, you really don't.
I think Glenn loves the idea of hard work outdoors.
He does.
He doesn't actually want to do it. Right. But it's helped him when he actually has attempted the work. He's not in a lot of pain anymore, which is a big deal. This is 100% drug-free. It's created by doctors. It's got four key ingredients that help your body's fight against inflammation, which is where the pain is coming from. They've got a three-week quick start for $19.95. This is an easy way to give it a shot, see if it works for you. 70% of people, it does work for them. They're ordering more. Why not see if this is going to help you? For $20, to find out if you can get rid of this issue that you're having with pain, that's the easiest bargain you're ever going to find. If you go to drug-free and natural way to ease your pain, go to relieffactor.com. It's relieffactor.com.
It's Pat and Stu for Glenn. You can also check out my show weekday mornings between 6 and 8 Central Time, so 7 and 9 Eastern, and on Pat Gray Unleashed and the Blaze Radio and TV Network. And, you know, anytime on podcast if you can't get up that early.
We spoke about football a little bit earlier. I think we have a clip from More on Trivia. Maybe we can play that today.
Oh, yeah.
Past More on Trivia. Mm-hmm. Because tomorrow you have a special edition of More on Trivia for Thanksgiving, right?
Right.
Yep. That's always a fun one.
And we're 9-2 on the season.
Which is one of the best
9-2.
Yeah. It's one of the best years in the history of More on Trivia.
I mean, and some of these weeks I'm thinking, it's not going to be right this week. And then it is. I don't. It's so weird.
it's so weird.
It's a really good predictor of who's going to win the game. I mean, I don't know of a better predictor.
I certainly wish, I honestly wish I just was just moved to Vegas and just started betting More on Trivia years ago.
You would have made some money.
Yeah.
You definitely would have made some money.
We do have a clip. Can we hear that? Want to listen
sure.
to this now?
Yeah, we might as well.
Do you know what the setup is to this?
We're asking questions of store clerks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What made you do that? Other than the entire rule of the game.
That's the rule of the game.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much just that.
Okay.
So
here's the clip from, this is from past last Friday.
Just last Friday.
Pat Gray Unleashed. Mm-hmm.
Karen, hi.
Hi.
Name one country in the Middle East.
Pakistan.
What did you say?
Pakistan.
Idaho would have been a really good answer.
Oh, that's true.
There's a new movie coming out soon about the life of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. What is Ruth Bader Ginsburg best known for?
A writer.
Oh, a writer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A writer. Oh, yeah. Ooh. No, she is the woman who invented women. She invented women.
Really?
Right? Yeah. The abbreviation GDP is short for what three words?
Whoa. Okay. Easy.
I have no
he
idea.
Didn't mean that. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I didn't mean it.
It's Christian over here.
It's get down and party.
Really?
Yeah.
GDP is get down and party?
Yeah, get down and party. Mm. A lot of people don't know that.
People...
A lot of people don't know that Pakistan's not in the Middle East either. But Commissioner Jeffy gave her that answer.
Why do you still have him in that role?
I don't know. We gotta fire him as commissioner because he's terrible. And then every time there's a flag on the field, and we go to the flag on the field, and somebody makes a really good point, it's like, yeah, okay, well, thanks for your concern. Bye. I mean, he doesn't even consider any flag on the field, no matter how legitimate. He doesn't care.
No.
He just doesn't care. He's already made his ruling. He's already made his mind up, and that's it.
Well, he's a bad person.
He is. He's a terrible person.
The foundation of this problem is that he's not a good guy.
Right.
If you want to hear more from the good guy, he's got a podcast. What's it called?
Chewing the Fat.
Chewing the Fat with Jeff Fisher. I guess listen to it or something. It's available on our on our channel, and I don't know.
And he'll join us again tomorrow for more on trivia as well.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
There's kind of an amazing moment has occurred here with the Women's March. Now, you may know the Women's March as a really kind of terrible organization, not because women are terrible, but because, first of all, I think they started off on the wrong foot because their first protest was literally the day of or the day after the inauguration of the president of the United States. So they didn't even give him a chance to be bad, right? Like, they didn't give him a chance to be president and do something bad against women that they could fight against. They just did it the day after he entered the office. They were like, we protest his choice on the drapes. It was like there's nothing to protest yet. Obviously, like, they didn't like Donald Trump generally, but like, that is what the election is, right? You make your case there. And then once the president becomes the president, just like we did with Barack Obama, by the way, you give him a chance to do what he does. And when he starts doing things like the bailouts and when he starts doing in stimulus package and cash for clunkers, he confirms what you previously believed about him. And then you can say, OK, now we're protesting. The Tea Party didn't start the day after, at least to me, at least on this show, it didn't. The day after he was elected, it was until he started doing things that didn't work out. It was 2010, that election, right? Not 2000, you know. It wasn't hardcore. And, you know, I think the first protest I remember about him was in April of 2009, which I think at the time Glenn even said, it's too early. He hasn't done enough yet on these issues, like taxes. It wasn't until a little later that we really, okay, this is really happening. He's really going for these things. And then you got to be out there. So that I thought was mistake number one for the Women's March movement. And then mistake number two was associating itself with really awful people like Linda Sarsour, who is, outwardly an anti-Semite and has all sorts of issues that she's associated with. She's associated herself with Louis Farrakhan and will not distance herself. Same thing with Tamika Mallory. These are high-level people. So this has just come out from Teresa Shook. She is one of the founders of the Women's March. This is a remarkable statement. As founder of the Women's March, my original vision and intent was to show the capacity of human beings to stand in solidarity and love against the hateful rhetoric that had become part of the political landscape in the U.S. and around the world. I wanted us to prove that the majority of us are decent people who want a world that is fair, just and inclusive of women and all people. And all was capitalized there. So she meant it. Like if she just had all A-L-L with all lowercase, like that's like just a passing statement. But she capitalized the A. That means all people, not just men and women, all the genders, anyone who's identifying as a person today.
And that just makes it so powerful.
It does.
With the caps or an exclamation point. Yeah. It's a little scary, though.
Yeah.
Because you know they really are intense about it. Then. Mm-hmm.
Sure are. they proved that, they say, on January 21st, 2017. Now she writes, Bob Bland, who I don't know, Tamika Mallory, Linda Sarsour, and Carmen Perez of Women's March, Inc. Women's March, Inc. I love how they turned it into an incorporation. incorporation. Have steered the movement away from its true course. I have waited, hoping they would right the ship, but they have not. in opposition to our unity principles, both capitalized, by the way, which makes you know it's important. They have allowed anti-Semitism, anti-LBGTQIA sentiment.
Wow, they're missing a Q, one Q.
And a question mark, right?
Yes.
Or is that the other Q?
And that's the other Q. Mm-hmm. But they're also missing the two. For Two-Spirit. That's so discriminatory that you haven't included the Two-Spirit people.
I think we came to the conclusion a previous time doing the show together that mm-hmm. we really liked Quilt Bag.
Yes.
And Quilt Bag 2, Electric Boogaloo, would cover all of that, including the two. So I do
you
think...
You do throw in the Electric Boogaloo,
I
though,
do
at
think,
the end?
Well, there's going to be a lot of new stuff. I got to assume most of it's covered by Electric Boogaloo. So if you do Quilt Bag 2, Electric Boogaloo, then you know you're tolerant.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. But in opposition to our unity principles, they have allowed anti-Semitism, anti-Quilt Bag 2, Electric Boogaloo sentiment, and hateful racist rhetoric to become part of the platform by their refusal to separate themselves from groups that espouse these racist, hateful beliefs. I call for the current co-chairs to step down and to let others lead who can restore faith in the movement and its original intent. I stand in solidarity, and this is capitalized, so you know it's important, solidarity, mm-hmm. with all the sister march organizations to bring back the movement to its authentic purpose. As Women's March founder, I am stepping up to bring focus back to the unity principles, and that's capitalized, so you know it's important. And I am stepping up to bring back focus to... and with all the support of those who march and have continued to march, I pledge to support grassroots decentralized leadership. Promoting decentralized leadership is an interesting thing coming from this group. Why wouldn't you want it centralized? I don't understand. Central control is so great. Promoting a safe worldwide community devoid of hate speech, bigotry, and racism. This is something that we have on the right criticized the Women's March about, saying, hey, if you want to be taken seriously in this movement, you got to distance yourself from people like Louis Farrakhan and the people who are working with them, like Linda Sarsour, like Tamika Mallory. And we're getting our wish here.
Yeah.
She is, I mean, the founder of the Women's March is saying, this isn't right. We're going in the wrong direction. You even saw Alyssa Milano, who...
After she resisted that for a long time.
She did resist it for a long time, and then she also denounced them and what they were doing. So there is some movement here. I think they've finally been guilted into saying, you know, maybe your advocacy of the position that Jews are bad isn't all that wonderful. And it's nice that they've discovered that. When it comes to the connection between gender and race and all these things that are so important, you hear this all the time from Democratic politicians largely and also in the media. It's a constant focus. This is how women will vote. This is how African Americans will vote. This is you have to make sure you have this a number of people on your on each group so we can show it's diverse. That is so common. I even get the sense, I think, that that's reality. That's how people are. Most like there's a split between conservatives and liberals, in which liberals, you know, the left sees this as, you know, vitally important, diversity for diversity's sake, skin color for skin color's sake. And mm-hmm. conservatives see it as like, what about the merit of the person? Like, that's been I feel like, a debate. It's not really the battle lines, though. This is fascinating. This is a poll, and this is in the Huffington Post. They wrote about this. Would you say that you share a lot of common interests and concerns with other people of your gender? Or would you say it's not really irrelevant? Now, in my mind, Democrats are going to say it's 80% really relevant, and Republicans are going to say 80% not relevant. And in the middle, like, you know, maybe it splits out a little bit differently than that. Maybe in the, you know, somewhere in the middle among independents. This is not the case. In fact, it's really only true with female Democrats. And it's still not to the scale that we're talking about. Listen to this. Female Democrats, do you believe you have a lot of common interests and concerns based on gender? Female Democrats say yes, 50%, no, 34%. Now, even that to me is not nearly as high as I imagined it in my head. Based on the debates we see in politics and in media, I would have said it would be much more dramatic than that. Female independents, 29% say, yeah, I'm a woman, I have a lot in common with other women. Only 29%, 45% say no. Among Republicans, only 27% of females say yes, they have interests with common interests with other women. 63% say no. So you kind of get the general split there, but not nearly as dramatic as you'd expect. What's even more interesting, I think, is males. And of course, obviously, as a sexist, you'd expect that out of me. Male Republicans, only 24% say they have something in common with other men. In other words, you're thinking of yourself as part of a group and we're all in this together and we all have the same concerns because, you know, that's what it, instead you think of people as individuals. Mm-hmm. Only 24% say yes. 61% say no. Among male independents, it's actually lower. 21% say they have something in common with their gender. 50% say no. So 24% of male Republicans say yes. Male independents, it's only 21%. But maybe the most shocking thing of all, the lowest support out of all these groups, male Democrats. Male Democrats say, now maybe that's because they're saying, well, it's because women are the important ones and not us or whatever. Only 21% say they have a lot in common when it comes to basing things on gender. Hmm. That's kind of a fascinating thing. When you look at some of the other findings, 52% of all Americans who identify with a political party, including half of Democrats and 55% of Republicans, say they share a lot in common with their party. Now, that's one you should share a lot in common with, right? Because this is an ideologically based organization in theory, right? Like, you should have the same concerns as other Democrats.
How would why would you be a Democrat? Answer that question, though. As would you say you have a lot in common with the Republican Party right now? I'd probably say no.
No, I'm not a Republican or an independent, so I wouldn't necessarily, and neither are you, right? I mean, you're not a registered Republican. Although, you know, I certainly typically vote for more Republicans than Democrats. I vote with a lot of libertarians as well. But again, if you're in a party, and I don't take that stance largely because I don't believe in the way the party system works. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. So I don't join a party, but if I'm going to join a party, what reason would you join a party other than the ideas and concerns being similar? Like, that number should be 100%. Now, there's people in there you could say, well, I disagree with what we're doing and I'm fighting against it. However, if that's true, like, there's also an argument to just find a new party, right? Like, go to a party that's, like, the party is just supposed to identify your values and try to push them over the line in elections. Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to be a group you are aligned with your entire life. We saw this a lot with, you know, people who were Democrats in the 50s, you know, and they really love, they were the 50s Democrats, and they remained Democrats through the 80s when the Republicans were much closer to their views than the Democrats of the 80s were. Mm-hmm. But they remained Democrats because they were loyal to that party and it was part of their identity, right? They saw it as part of their core, which is not what a party's supposed to do for you. It's not. I mean, they change all the time. We see them change on positions all the time. If you're changing with them, that's fine, as long as you're leading that, not them. They shouldn't be leading you to a new position. Black Americans were split 38-34 as to whether or not they had much in common with others who share their race or ethnicity. Would you believe that? Looking at the way we are told that African Americans vote in lockstep, they never disagree with each other, all they do is care about racism. The way the media paints the African American in this country is a crime. They paint them as mindless people who just will always vote with Democrats, and they don't think for themselves, and they can't get ID. And it's like, who are these? I don't know any African-Americans like that. African-Americans I know think for themselves, just like every other race and every other group. You know, it's insulting, and somehow the media gets away with
this. And bleeding and acting otherwise is racist.
Yeah. They're not groups are, it's a terrible way to identify people. You know, you are an individual. And I know as conservatives, we understand that. The media just likes to lump everybody in groups so they can talk generally about them. Mm-hmm. And that's a terrible idea. It's actually the core of what racism was, right?
Yes.
When you think of people as groups instead of individuals, this is when you get when you have lots of problems. It's how anti-Semitism exists. Those Jews do X, Y, and Z. There may be a person who is Jewish who does things that you don't like, and that's okay. The media should learn that about George Soros. Who's, really more of an atheist at this point. But still, the point is that, like, you can criticize someone as they do with Jared Kushner, with Ivanka Trump, with Sheldon Adelson. They're fine finding criticism there. It doesn't make them anti-Semitic. Of course not. But when a conservative says something bad about, you know, Chuck Schumer, well, then it's just because we're anti-Semites. George Soros, oh, you're just an anti-Semite. It's Jewish money you're criticizing. It has nothing to do with it. He is making decisions that we don't like politically. And that should be okay. 30% of Americans younger than 30 say they have a lot in common with others their age. A third of those, age 45 to 64, say that they agree with that. So not a huge amount there. But again, that's an interesting point. And then when it comes to income, people making less than 50 grand a year, say they have about a third of them say they have a lot in common with people in their income group. And it's lower when you get more wealthy. 59% of Americans who describe themselves as born again or evangelical Christians say that they share many interests and concerns with others of faith. That one should be higher. 59% is the highest number on this poll, but again, if you're in a faith,
definitely,
you should really consider yourself aligned with others as far as concerns go. Because,
yes.
I mean, that's kind of the whole base. Ideological groups, you should find a lot of the similar interests and concerns. Skin color, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Home title lock. A home title lock is, they actually showed us how they go and how the criminals can do home title fraud, where they
literally
just
takes them like 15 or 20 minutes,
yeah, 15, 20 minutes
to take your title.
Yeah. And they can take it and borrow hundreds of thousands of dollars. I've decided to stop doing radio and just go into business. It was so easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
I got to believe that I can probably get away with it. I know all the,
mm-hmm,
you know, just go and you just start taking, mm-hmm, people's homes, borrowing against their equity, and then spending the money on yourself.
Yeah.
That's what criminals are doing. And they can find your home as well, especially if you don't protect yourself.
Might want to stop it.
Yeah, you might want
to stop it. Go into HomeTitleLock.com.
Yeah, HomeTitleLock.com. It's pennies a day. They put a virtual barrier around your title and mortgage. And as soon as they find tampering, they're going to shut it down for you. Find out if you're already a victim. Get the $100 search free with sign up at HomeTitleLock.com. It's HomeTitleLock.com.
And right now, one of the things they're doing is trying to pin Ivanka Trump with the same problem that Hillary had when President Trump had everybody chanting, lock her up. They're going to be able to drum her out of the picture in the White House?
Right. Because, I mean, we have to go back and revisit the lock her up thing.
Mm-hmm.
This was seen as a sign of sexism by Republicans who wanted to lock up Hillary Clinton with no evidence, no trial, showed that they don't, mm-hmm, care about due process, showed that they just wanted to. Now, of course, what we all know is it was a little bit over the top chant about saying we don't want her to be president of the United States, right? Yeah. It was a dumb part of a, mm-hmm, political election, like locking, mm-hmm, her up. Like, obviously, let's all be clear about this. Obviously, Donald Trump does not think that she should be locked up, because if he did, he would do something about it. He's president of the United States. He controls these levers. He's done nothing in 2 years about it. He does not think she should be locked up. He could say all he wants. He wants her to be locked up, but he was doing that it's basically a campaign tactic. He has the ability to do something about this and hasn't done anything about it. Now, who knows? Maybe he will in the future if he thinks it's a positive thing. But he said right after the election, look, I think we've done enough to her. I think the family's gone through enough.
Yeah.
Now, that's not how the law works. I don't know if anyone knows this. When you commit a crime, we're not supposed to say, well, look.
Yeah, they've been through enough.
Look, his daughter.
They got a lot of negative publicity. Don't leave him alone.
His daughter lost the prom queen thing, first of all. She didn't make the cross-country team. And now, and just because her dad robbed a bank, we can't do that to her as well.
Come on.
He doesn't need to go to prison for that. That's not how that works, right? If you commit a crime, you should be investigated for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that, you know, we're somehow embracing this idea that because she's a powerful political figure who's is probably close to, if not a billionaire, who has lost a political election, like, so she gets out of whatever crime she committed. Like, that's not a sensible way of dealing with this. And I think the reality of it is when they look at it, like, you know, could you go after her if you really wanted to? Yeah, you probably could. I mean, she did seemingly, mm-hmm, do things that were in violation of rules and probably illegal in some way, but it would be difficult to prove. It would be a very large undertaking. It would cost a fortune. It would be a massive thing that tore apart the country even more than it already is. And for that reason, it's just not worth the hassle, I think. It's probably not. She's not going to jail for 50 years over it, you know, over the, mm-hmm, email thing. And who knows? Maybe she would have if we saw all of her emails, right? But we didn't. So that's the whole reason why that crime exists in the first place. The Ivanka thing is a totally different story. And what the media is doing, and it's fascinating coming from the media, in that every single time you say, well, Barack, wait, you're complaining about Donald Trump separating kids on the border. Well, look at these pictures from the Barack Obama administration. And they'll say, oh, whataboutism. Are you, is this more whataboutism? What's going on right now? What's important now? Mm-hmm. So this is just blatant whataboutism. You complained about Hillary Clinton in her emails during the campaign. And now
what
Ivanka Trump
Ivanka?
Has sent emails yep. from a private email address and about work issues. And now you don't care. This is the same story, and we should all care about it the same way. Stunningly, some actual sense, I guess, is coming from MSNBC on this issue, who's separating wow. the issue a little bit. Here's a segment from their coverage this morning. Listen.
In both cases, these women used private email accounts to communicate with government officials. Both women used private attorneys to determine what emails should be reviewed and which should be retained. And like Trump, Clinton pleaded ignorance of the rules surrounding email usage. But there are important differences as well.
Okay.
Trump's use of private email appears to cover about 7 months, from February 2017 until last fall. Hillary Clinton used it for all 4 years that she served as Secretary of State.
Okay.
According to people familiar with an internal review that began last year, Trump's attorney found less than 1,000 emails that discussed her official schedule and fewer than 100 that discussed government business with other administration
100.
Officials. By comparison, Clinton's attorneys determined that about 30,000 of Clinton's emails okay. addressed official business
close,
and had to be turned over to the State Department. According to the FBI, another 31,000 emails were deleted after Clinton determined that they were personal.
How many for Ivanka?
Trump's attorney says none of her emails were deleted. Trump's attorney also insists none of her emails contained classified information.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, none have been uncovered. But we don't know. We haven't seen the rest. On the other hand, the State Department determined more than 2,000 of Clinton's emails included classified information.
So
and
zero.
In some cases,
same
they
thing.
Were marked
so
top
it's the same
secret.
Thing. Right?
Right.
Hey, sure, in Hillary's case, it's like maybe 61,000
mm-hmm.
Emails that had to do with sensitive government information to maybe less than 100 of Ivanka's.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that they, I mean, the Secretary of State is probably privy to some pretty serious information that
yeah.
she could be sharing on these emails.
I'd also note the first daughter is not held to the standard of
right.
the Secretary of State.
Yes.
Now, she is an advisor to the president, so she has some role formally in the government, I guess. But
mm-hmm.
you know, and she has to follow these rules just like everybody else. But again, 100 emails versus 30,000. Deleted emails, it was zero versus 30,000. It was 4 years rather than a few months. I mean, all of these, like... the one thing I will say about it from the negative perspective on Ivanka and others who have been in the administration who have done this is because it was such a big deal during
after
the election.
After all of this,
after
you should know
that,
better.
You should know better.
Yeah.
You shouldn't. You
yeah.
gotta. I mean, you just know this is going to be a problem because of what a big problem it was for Hillary during the election. And you should probably make sure you're just on government email all the time unless it's private business. That is... A lot of these wind up being, though, tied together. And Hillary tried to make this point with some of the things that she did. Some of them were absolutely not this way. But like, if you're sending if we're saying, if tonight I'm going to Creed 2, very excited to go see Creed 2. And if I'm in the government and I'm like, well, I got to find a time. I'm going to see Creed 2. What time do I need to go? What does my schedule look like? And they send back my schedule. Technically, that's government business, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I don't know. Can that be on a private email server? Sure. Right. Like in theory, the mm-hmm. other point I would bring up, though, is that one. There's a difference between a private email account and a private email server. If you are doing a private email account, you open up a Gmail, you open a Yahoo account, whatever you have, hotmail.com. A lot of people, hotmail.com. A lot of people on that. If you're on hotmail.com, your stuff is all stored by, Google or whatever else. And if it needs to be seen, that there's an availability to get it. You can't delete all your emails out of your Gmail account. At least there's ways that Google can get them if, like, let's say they're subpoenaed, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Google will work within those legal restrictions. If you have a private email server, there's a reason you do that. The reason you do that is to pull all of that outside of the... Why? Google's free, right? Like, if you want to... if you want to go and send emails about cooking recipes, you can do that over Google pretty safely. When you do a private email server, you are launching intent. Hillary Clinton knew she was going to run for president again, did not want all of her emails to be public. So she didn't send them on the government accounts. And then when she set up her private server, she deleted 30,000 of them, knowing that no one could recover them.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't. You most likely would not get away with that if you were on
Gmail. And they might have all been sensitive. We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know because we haven't seen them. We don't get the chance to read them.
Let's just say, Pat, you were going to send an email mm-hmm. that was sensitive in nature that you knew if it came out would affect your future presidential campaign.
Yeah.
Okay. And you had a choice whether to send it to through a government account.
Yeah.
B, a public, popular Gmail type account, or mm-hmm. C, your own private server that exists in your home that you could light on fire
that
if
nobody
you want,
could see,
that nobody can see, and no one has access to. Which one would you choose?
That is a hard one.
And then can I phone
a friend?
You can,
okay.
But let me give you one more piece of information because it's going to be hard for the friend.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a situation in which you knew there might be one of these political controversies coming up,
mm-hmm.
and you were going to choose which ones to delete. Would you say delete 29,500 emails that were just about cooking and 500 of the most sensitive, terrible things you don't want in public? Or would you just, was it just recipes? If you had that opportunity to get rid of all those private emails about your grandkids,
mm-hmm.
and you could just throw in a couple of more slipped in there that happen to be the things that make me look bad, which one would you choose?
And again, wow.
Do you want to phone a friend? Let me give you the name, Hillary Clinton. Phone her.
Because she should know by now, right? She should know better. But everybody should, though.
Yeah, you should.
Just the appearance of it is unfortunate.
It's a political mistake.
Unfortunate.
We say that, like, Scott Pruitt was guilty of this occasionally. The guy who was in EPA initially in the Trump administration did a lot of really good things at the EPA. But he mm-hmm. was, once he got into this realm of, like, he was being talked about as this corrupt guy who was doing all these things that he shouldn't be doing. After that, you can't order the $1,000 pens.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you shouldn't be ordering them anyway. And is it a huge controversy? $1,000 in the government? I mean, come on. They order that in catering five times a day. However, mm-hmm. when you know that you're already under that microscope, be careful with that stuff. And I think the Trump administration should learn that lesson. They should know that. They shouldn't
absolutely
give any of this material to the media.
Yeah.
But again, I give MSNBC some credit there. They actually characterized that pretty accurately.
They kind of did.
Yeah.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Well, there is a lot of production that goes into these.
There's all kinds of productions. And that's one of the things, you know, look, it has been, you know, when you watch a lot of the movies, you see them in the same place.
Oh, yeah.
The same house.
Oh,
the porn industry will rent a house for a day and film, you know, 20 or 30 movies.
Oh, don't say that. Because I did stay in a porn house once.
What?
Really?
In fact, our wonderful host, Glenn Beck,
mm-hmm.
I was actually the one I would say was responsible for this happening. Because
oh my God.
This is, we were in L.A., gosh, it was just a month or two ago. No, it was a few months mm-hmm. before. It was 6 months ago, maybe?
Oh, is it that long?
Maybe not. I mean, it was this year, though, for sure. And
okay.
We're in L.A., and we go to this house, and it's exactly what you would picture a house. Like, what would a porn director think rich people have? This is what it felt like. So it's right. It was very white and modern.
White, modern, wide open space.
Wide open spaces, front, lots of glass together. Everywhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of everything in, like, different floors and like, a big open pool.
Yeah.
But protected, somewhat private, with really, mm-hmm. like, nice views. And so the way it was, I don't know if it's like an Airbnb or something, but it was like all of us, the whole show went out to this. Instead of getting, you know, 12 hotel rooms, we had a bunch of people out there. Because we did the TV and radio show out there.
When we went to the Super Bowl in San Francisco, too, we played at the house.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
That one was not a porn show.
You don't know that, though.
A porn house.
I'm going to find out pretty soon. I'll tell you that.
Well, it was Nicolas Cage's house.
So
his old house, so it's possible.
His old house.
It's possible. So when we pull into the house, one of the people, I will not out this person, but one of the people who... who was with us traveling,
familiar.
Says, uh-huh. and it wasn't Jeffy, shockingly, one of the people says, wait a minute, I've stayed in this house before. And so, how do you stay in this? That's random. Mm-hmm. And then he says, and you know what? It's a porn house. Now, I didn't know there was such a thing as a porn house, but apparently, like, very commonly, the same, as Jeffy just pointed out, the same sets get used because you can just rent the house for a day and film a bunch of stuff at the same time. So, apparently, he had stayed in this house earlier with a previous radio show that I won't name. and for protecting the innocent here. And while they were there, they were like, this looks like a porn house. I bet this has been a porn house. And they assigned one of the producers find the movie that this house was in. So they,
nice.
So of course, like, what? How many porn movies are? I mean, every day there's probably 7,000 made. That's my
at least.
I don't know, right?
At least.
So how could you ever find it? So they stay at the house for like a week. They leave. 2 months later, he gets a text. I found it.
So he had done some research.
He had done a lot of research.
Uh-huh. That's a good bit right there.
Wow.
And it sent a screenshot. Of one of
it.
The scenes.
My gosh.
That's great.
Out by the pool area.
Uh-huh.
Now, God only knows what else happened in this house. I mean, I went immediately into emergency surgery to just dump like bleach into my body to disinfect.
Well, they do clean it.
That's icky.
You would assume they clean it.
Clean it.
Though, you know, I think potentially lighting it on fire is a better solution.
Yeah.
But apparently it was actually a porn house, and God only knows how many movies have been made in this thing, because it's exactly what you would think, like, Ron Jeremy would think is the place to own.
Right.
Right? Like, it's that type of situation.
I found it.
You got to love the dedication of a young producer.
Yeah.
Just watching hours and hours and hours of porn to try to find, to quote unquote, try to find the house. Like, I've got a free pass. It's work. I swear. So that's a.
That is fantastic.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.